Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Tasmanian Devin here, and we have episode 2 of the Enscape Deep Dive Series. I'm so honored to be bringing the story of Enscape that we're going to be talking through taking a deeper dive. And today we're going into the episode 2 of a 3-part series. Make sure you go back and you listen to show 157, where we had the fireside chat with the founder, Moritz Luck. And also check out the episode with Enoch Chow of EYRC. But today is episode 2. And today I'm so pumped to have Matt McMullen back into Studio AOC, who has been my guest co-host on many of these awesome podcast conversations where we're taking many tools and connecting them with handshakes. And so Matt, we have Matt here, and this one is a twofold one where Matt has been here listening and enjoying the ride, but he's also bringing Able Design Group, his firm, in with us and bringing in a couple of his superstars. So make sure you go check out those other podcasts. This is all brought to you by Enscape, and the problem we're solving is learning and understanding real-time rendering. Welcome, Matt, to the studio.
Hey, thanks, Devin. I appreciate it. This is exciting to be here, not only just as guest co-host, but also to bring a couple of folks in our Able Design Group firm. We've got one person, Mallory, who is with our Houston office, one of our superstars down there on the tech side, and Justin Gross, who is in our Denver office here. And so we're going to chat with them a little bit about introduction of Enscape into our firm today.
So that's where our listening audience, now I heard this, so there's 3 locations of Able Design Group, right?
Yeah, we have an office in Austin, we have an office in Houston, which is the mothership, and then we have our Denver office.
Awesome. So what's the kind of founding principles and what Able Design Group's all about?
Well, Jeffrey Abel, who was our managing principal, started the firm back in Houston, Texas in 2001, specifically as a commercial interiors firm, and then grew to a Denver location, and then grew to an Austin location, which is our most recent office. We also have architecture within those offices as well, too. So that's actually my position, as I lead the architecture practice here in Denver. And Laura Swank is our associate principal in the Denver office, who leads our commercial interiors.
Awesome. So commercial interiors and architecture all coming together. Those sound like some awesome silos we should talk about breaking down with real-time rendering, huh?
Yeah, it's a real diverse firm. We do, like I say, corporate interiors. We do hospitality. We do restaurant. We do retail. And we're also doing multifamily and single family now. So we bridge across several disciplines.
Cool. And then before we go in and get to know Mallory and Justin, I wanted to tee this up with one more story, as we are really working hard to connect these technologies with handshakes, but we're literally doing it as well, Art of Construction Tribe. So we're using a tool that we call our virtual experience. And I want to give credit where credit is due to Justin, who Matt and I have the vision in the context and said, we're going to scan your office and then we're just going to give you this stuff, Justin, and you make it work. And so Justin, behind the scenes, we've had all kinds of really cool meetings with different tools, but that's what's really fun, is that we want to practice what we preach. So without further ado, Matt, let's go in. And first, we're going to do the speed round with asking Justin the questions and then followed up by Mallory. So what do you say? Let's go get to know your team, Able Design Group, and let's talk about solving and discussing what is all about real-time rendering. Huh, Matt?
Sounds great, man. Let's do it.
All right. Lock and load. Here we go. What's your favorite beverage?
You know, I moved to Denver about 5 years ago, and there's so many good breweries in this city that I'm going to keep it generic here. I'm just going to say a light beer on a summer day on a patio at one of our many great breweries.
Awesome. Well, I got to put you on the spot. We got to put one out there. What's one that comes to mind?
So I used to live really close to Breckenridge Brewery. down in Littleton, and they've got a wonderful outdoor patio. So I'm just going to say an Avalanche Ale from Breckenridge Brewery.
Ooh, good stuff. What's a favorite place you've traveled?
You know, I haven't done a lot of traveling abroad, but I have done a lot of traveling within our state here. My wife and I have taken a few trips down to the San Juan Mountain Range in southwestern Colorado. I'm just going to say one of our many trips out there. We have such a great time when we go.
Oh, man, the old Colorado staycations. I love it. Give us one story from the San Juans.
So this past winter, my wife and I went skiing at Silverton Mountain out in Silverton, Colorado. And we got to go helicopter skiing. So, you know, just the experience of flying over the San Juans in the middle of winter in a helicopter is pretty special.
Awesome. Cool stuff. So what's your favorite hobby or interest outside of the construction silos we're passionately breaking down? We call the art of construction.
Very passionate downhill skier. Also kind of gotten into, climbing, hiking, of course.
Awesome. Well, we got to know a little bit about Justin outside of the art of construction. We'll hear his story that led him to Able Design Group next. But Mallory, you got to hear the questions first. So what's your favorite beverage?
Non-alcoholic. I really like an Arnold Palmer, which is a tea and lemonade drink. But for relaxing and stuff, I really like Jack Daniels and Diet Coke.
All right. Jack and Diet.
Jack and Diet.
All right. What's your favorite place you've traveled?
Probably Austria is my favorite place. I've been there about 3 or 4 times throughout high school and college, and I really enjoy it. The mountains are gorgeous, and they have a really rich history. And then there's the Swarovski Crystal Museum, which is quite the art installation. If you ever have a chance to go, it's incredible. You walk under this mountain hill with a big face on it with a mouth and go underground into these almost like an exhibit using Swarovski crystals. And you don't even have to like crystals to like the museum. It's super, super interesting, and they change it all the time. But what's really interesting to what Justin said, I was in Durango, Colorado, and I've skied Silverton, and I love that area around there. My parents have a house up there, so I totally agree with him on that. It's a great place.
Did you guys know each other had been there?
No.
So no. That's what this show is all about, right?
I just got married there last year.
Art of Construction, connecting people.
Right,
with
so we can go skiing together sometime.
Awesome. There we go. So what's your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos?
Probably I'm a big music person. I like going to concerts, festivals, and I've started to get into doing festivals with like large art installations with the large group, and then kind of incorporating music in that. Something I do probably twice a year. I think it's real fun.
Awesome. Super cool, Mallory. Well, Justin Gross, what's your story that led you to be the associate at Able Design Group?
So I moved to Colorado about 5 years ago. I started working for another firm here in town, but ultimately was led to Laura Swank. Got in touch with her and all the cool things that she was up to here in the Able Design Group Denver office. Just wanted to be a part of it. And then we brought Matt along have enjoyed it ever since.
Awesome. And Mallory, what's your story?
I'm from Houston, and I moved back home after college and got a job at another firm working with them for 9 years. And it was a bit smaller, and it was just time for a change. And I knew Able Design Group was a reputable firm with really good looking work online. And then I got it in through a rep, and now I'm here.
Cool. Well, we got to know a little bit about Justin and Mallory, and Matt's going to help circle this all back as we go down the vein of real-time rendering. So Justin, help me understand, as I don't use Enscape, my job is to connect everybody and have a lot of fun. Like hopefully someday I hear a story about how you guys went to Silverton skiing, but today we're going to talk about real-time rendering. So Justin, why does real-time rendering matter in your eyes?
Yeah, good question. I'm going to break apart your question for a minute and first talk about why I think rendering matters and then why I think rendering in real time matters. So, you know, in the architecture industry, we've been rendering for a pretty long time. I guess probably in the ballpark of 20 years or so, which may not be that long in the scheme of things. But it's a tremendous tool that we have available to us to be able to show a client what their building will look like before it gets built is obviously a wonderful thing that we should be expected to execute. And we like to think we do it pretty well here at Able Design Group. So that's why I kind of think rendering matters. The real-time portion of it, I'm sort of newer to. We at Able Design Group are relatively new to Inkscape. We implemented it office-wide just a couple of months ago. So we're all sort of new to it. But historically, we weren't rendering in real time, right? We were using other pieces of software where you would kind of set things up, set materials up, get your settings right, push that render button and wait for, you know, 10 minutes or whatever until you see what it looks like, and then you tweak it and you come back to it. So now we're able to kind of compress that timeline. We don't have to wait 10 minutes between every little setting tweak anymore. And so ultimately we're getting a better product in a shorter amount of time.
Awesome. What a cool answer. And as this deep dive series where Inkscape is behind this, we put this together to have different levels of users. And this is super cool for me to hear a couple months of using Inkscape to where if you go listen to Enoch's podcast, he was one of the first adopters. So their firm has been from the beginning to 2 months. And I think there'll be some great conversation coming out of that. So same question for you, Mallory. Why does real-time rendering matter?
To piggyback off what Justin said, I think the compression of time with real-time rendering, you can really test drive the design from big issues to small issues, and to be able to get those answers quicker helps us speed along the process to be able to be more efficient with our time for our clients. Real-time rendering, I think, allows us to sell an experience, even starting at the lowest design level of space planning or even conceptual ideas. And then with the real-time rendering, what it allows us to do is eliminate outsourcing to someone perhaps overseas, or having to wait, like Justin said, if you click render and it's however long it takes, maybe 2 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours, depending on your memory quality. It really lets you test run your design before you present to the client.
Matt, this is going to be gold. I love the answers from different perspectives there. Kudos for you for putting this together with your firm. But we're going to go here where you're going to be able to kind of circle this back with us. So can you circle back with the Able Design Group approach as you guys, if I heard you, Justin, right, 2 months, you guys just went in firm-wide with Inkscape because you see why real-time rendering matters.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where I guess the approach to rendering was more of a static approach is what I would call it, rather than a fluid approach. And so as Mallory was saying, it was sort of an after the fact type thing with the renderings. And what Inkscape has allowed us to do is really meet what Jeffrey Abel, the managing principal, talks about as a core principle and vision for the firm is actively listening to our clients. In giving them not only what they want, but more than they want. And so I think the beauty that we've seen in Inkscape so far is that for clients who may have a difficulty thinking three-dimensionally, rather than just show them what we've created after the fact, we actually engage them in the process where we can sit with them at a desk or in a conference room and make changes real-time. And then they can see those changes show up on the screen. So they truly become active participants.
Awesome. So when I hear from the Art of Construction tribe and leaders like Able Design Group, you better be involved with real-time rendering. But help me understand, Mallory, what did you do before real-time rendering?
I mean, to go back a bit, you know, we first started as designers and architects as hand sketches. I mean, you would maybe do a 2D plan and, you know, draw a perspective 3D, but a hand sketch only limits you to so much. And to be able to change it with your client, you're just sketching over your sketch and a lot of trace paper. Then we kind of moved into computer renderings with SketchUp, Google SketchUp, Viz, and Rhino. But when SketchUp started, we did a lot of Photoshopping to make it look even more realistic. I think Inkscape has become the best tool we've seen to be able to have a realistic representation of the design as we're doing it.
So if I'm hearing you right, it's moving through the space in real time, and Inkscape allows you to be that guide in helping you real time versus a lot of cut and paste.
Correct.
Awesome. Justin, same question for you. What did you do before real time rendering?
Yeah, I'm a little bit younger in my career. You know, I was in school 6 or 7 years ago. And so rendering was, rendering digitally was an available tool to us. So I've kind of dabbled in just about everything. You know, animation software, standalone rendering platforms. I've kind of tried it all. To piggyback off of what I started to talk about a little bit earlier, you know, the historical way was to get everything set up, click your render button, wait 10 minutes, tweak something, click that render button again, wait another 10 minutes, kind of a lengthy process there. And we've been able to speed that up here a lot with Inkscape.
So Matt, can you circle that back for us of their perspectives? I like how it sounds like Justin has been using the digital pencil the whole time, but that's had its own curve, just like Mallory talked about starting with hand sketches.
Yeah, I see the two as being incredibly valuable, is that a lot of the top architects that I worked for when I was a younger guy coming up, they'd always say, as soon as you pick up a scale, you're screwed. And what they meant by that was there is a loss of creativity that happens as soon as you start to establish coordinates. And so back in the days of the scale and hand drawing, you picked up a scale, you were establishing the X and Y coordinates because it was in a 2D plane. Now that we're in CAD with Revit, ArchiCAD, and other systems, you have the Z coordinate, which is helpful, but it also is another limiting factor. And so we see that a lot here in our firm where people will start out by doing hand sketching, and then they'll translate that into Revit three-dimensionally. I think that, like I say earlier, I think the advantage to Inkscape is it allows you to kind of check and confirm that what you have built in your mind three-dimensionally is actually what it's going to feel like. Because in Inkscape, you can walk through the space. You can fly around it, but you can also, in a walkthrough mode, walk through it, look up and around, and get a feel for what you have in your mind is actually what the space is going to feel like.
So what you're saying is sometimes your clients don't see inside of your mind what you see inside of your mind, and that's hard to translate sometimes.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny too. Clients, you know, and it depends on who they are, you know. You know, if you work with a large CEO, or in the past I've worked with film producers, and they don't necessarily want to admit that they don't think well three-dimensionally, but then you'll get that question of, wait, which way is the door swinging? And you will show them, well, that circle right there means that the door's swinging this way. And then you know for sure that they really are not able to picture things three-dimensionally. So this kind of takes away that barrier where everybody's looking at the same, in quotations, TV show or game, to quote Moritz Luck. So, you know, I wanted to move forward, ask a couple questions here, because we've had Inkscape in the office here for, as Justin said, I think it's been around, you know, 3 months or so, 3 to 4 months. And we've seen some of the great things about Inkscape, and we've seen some of the challenges about Inkscape. So, you know, Mallory, let me throw it to you first. What are some of the positive experiences that you've had so far with using Inscape, and then some of the things where you're like, wow, I didn't anticipate that, and kind of need to pay attention to that.
As a person who does corporate interiors, that's the majority of what I do all day. I think what I really loved about Inscape when I started using it was, one, the videos, because what are we selling as designers? An experience, right? Not just a product, not just a space. It's an experience that you'd like to convince or show your client that is the right way to go, and how it can affect their employees and make their overall well-being better at their work place. I think that when using Inscape, the issue can be, how far do we go in the rendering during different phases of what we present to the client? So I think setting proper presentation expectations are important, because just because you can make a photorealistic drawing doesn't mean you should. We have clients that understand what we're doing and or that need some more guidance and might pick up on little details here and there and say, oh, that's not really like that. So I think that's our goal as designers, to make sure we're setting expectations with our clients of what they're going to get each phase that we present to them, and not to take Inscape too far into that realm.
So what I'm hearing from a lot of the Art of Construction tribe when we're talking about real-time rendering and the tool with Inscape is that you have to really rethink the business of architecture, because how and when you present this now fast tracks this, showing it from these flat designs to living in the video game or the movie, that then they see it and they just, seeing is believing, but then they think you can just do that. And there's a lot of things of there's, so there's a lot of consequences of good design is what I'm hearing. Is that what you're saying, Matt?
Yeah, you know, and Mallory brings up a super important point, is that I think Justin will talk about that a little bit here, maybe in a minute. You can put together really high quality renderings that feel like you're actually in the space. It feels like it's already built and you're maybe walking around with a camera looking at it. And what Mallory talks about is sometimes that may not be appropriate, where you'll want to be in a white model where you don't want the client to get into you know, what kind of textures, what kind of fabrics, what kind of finishes are going on in that space. At that point, it's really not necessary to have that discussion yet. It's more about the spatial experience in a workflow process if it's commercial interiors. So I think it's a very valid point.
So what I'm hearing from you, Matt, and I'm hearing from a lot of people, is like you're wanting them to look at this, but you just throw a couch or a flooring texture or something in there that was just to fill the space, and their eye may go to that, and then it can derail the conversation.
Yeah, like if all of a sudden they hate yellow or they hate red, you know, and then you've lost the client at that point, when really it is more about the spatial experience. Mallory, what are your thoughts on that?
I was just thinking, it's almost like an architect builds a model, right? And then we have a larger scope of work. So we're looking at a site with a couple different buildings, and you're able to experience that blocking mechanism that way. Inscape can act like that for interiors and architecture digitally, but we'd like to keep it in that phase of blocking at certain times. So it kind of backs up what you're saying, is that the way we phase it out to present to clients, it can be a white box. It can be simplified for them to see the form and function for the experience, versus what we'll do later on is finishes and materiality.
Yeah, so Art of Construction, I definitely think that's something you should think about with your business of architecture. Just because you can add everything into there doesn't mean that you just throw it all in there right away. It's, you really have to think through why and what you're showing those items to make sure the good design, but in the critical path, works with the project.
And that's true, Devin. I mean, when you think about the phrase, drinking from a fire hose, if you provide too much information too quickly and in too much detail, I think you can overwhelm the client because they've got too much to absorb at that point. And you're sort of kind of walking them through your design process to say, here's what your core principles are for your company. Here's what goals we were trying to accomplish by the design of this building or this space. And so you want to walk them through slowly so they understand your design process.
Justin, what's your take on this stuff?
Yeah, I work directly with Matt here in the office, And I'll tell a short story. We were recently working on a multifamily project, and we were sort of tasked with putting together some eye candy of what the building could be or what it could look like. So we put together some really high quality renderings using Inkscape, showed it to our client, and I think they saw it as this sort of finished package, right? We started getting questions about detailed questions about code and budget concerns and all that. And it's not to say that we weren't thinking about those items as we were designing the building, but the detail would have come in the next phase. The detail that the client was looking for from our answers, would have come in the next phase. And so, it's a delicate dance between showing the client a sort of finished product so that, we're not distracting the client if the roof is missing or, working on some single family housing projects right now. If we were to show them an empty living room, it wouldn't be a sort of an accurate space. That they could realize, but it's a difficult dance between showing them sort of a finished product, but also making sure they understand that things can still be changed.
Like Justin says, when I was being mentored by top designers as I was coming up, they'd always say two things. Your goal was two things when you'd come out of a presentation. Is if your clients are asking you really good, engaging questions, that means that they understand the design and that they are buying into the design and are most likely to approve it, which is what your goal is. And then the second thing is if they're thinking about how to build it, now you've almost jumped to a second hurdle where if they're really thinking about how they build the project, now they've really bought in. And so I think Inkscape, for me, and I think for our firm, what we've seen so far, it's truly like a facilitation tool, which allows you to get to those sort of two decision points or decision factors quickly.
That's great conversation. So real-time rendering in the tool of Inkscape is really facilitating that 3D visualizing of the design process and making sure the visions align and using that as a client presentation tool. But you got to make sure that you're really thinking through those buckets versus just throwing everything out there right away. The other thing I heard a couple of times, and I'll raise my hand and I ask the questions that I should know the answer because I've heard it a few times. Mallory, you guys said white box it. What is a white box?
There's in a lot of the programs that we've mentioned today, there's a rendering finish you can do where you pretty much give everything a white color and you provide shadows. So we call that a white box where you don't apply any finishes and everything's black and white. I don't know how to explain it. Matt, you probably better than I am, or Justin.
Yeah, it's like a shading model. So it's sort of a black and white and gray, and it's really about scale, massing, volumetric proportion. It's the experience of just walking through that space with the walls and those sorts of things, and not being distracted by the visual noise of fabrics and textures and colors. Awesome. And those sorts of things.
So the white box, great explanation, Mallory and Matt. Thanks for answering that for me, is to basically simplify that and not show a lot of the bells and whistles. The white boxes, it is that what we're talking about. You don't show them the finished product when you're not ready to show them the finished product. You show them the white box.
Yeah, and then the example of a small white box would be like that Chinese takeout box.
Fair enough. Well, we're all about getting lessons learned for the Art of Construction tribe, is that the best ideas are borrowed and moved forward. And that's what we're doing when we're connecting these technology to Handshake. So I would love to hear some lessons learned with using real-time rendering. And I've heard, a couple months to Mallory, I think, use it from a different firm and help bring those lessons learned to Able Design Group. So Mallory, let's start with you. What are some lessons learned that you've seen while using real-time rendering tools?
My previous firm, I wasn't really a Revit user. I was mostly in CAD and had a coworker that used Revit a lot. Now he works for a consulting firm, but he was the one who really taught me about Inkscape. I actually learned more about Inkscape first before Revit. So I have a love for Inkscape in the way that it can really be a tool for interiors person to show you certain things that maybe you weren't understanding the 2D plane, such as like ceiling connections or millwork connections, little details here and there that you might have only noticed once you were out in the field constructing it. It allows us to double check our design in the detailed world of materiality and maybe even just overall construction connections. And then I think the video quality of Inkscape is really nice, being able to show our clients a walkthrough and sell the experience, act as their guide almost. And then for Inkscape, I think, as we discussed earlier, setting expectations to understand, for our clients to understand what a white box quote rendering is versus a photorealistic at the end. I think it gives us a lot of options to use daily to for our clients.
Cool. So Justin, I heard you a couple months actually using Inkscape, but I love you only get one chance to make a first impression, and I'm hearing some really good things of a couple months. So what are some lessons learned with you using real-time rendering specific to Inkscape? You've used other real-time rendering tools that you had to wait 10 minutes for, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think the jump from traditional rendering to real-time rendering is similar to jumping from how something looks versus how it feels. So in traditional rendering, you're sort of tasked with getting that money shot, right? Like getting that perfect perspective of the building or whatever. Whereas real-time rendering, it's not so important because you can orbit around however you want, kind of snap a snapshot of any direction, any portion of the building that you want in seconds. And so for me, it helps me get a better understanding of how the building actually feels. So in traditional rendering, when you're focusing on maybe a straight-on view of a wall or something, you don't get to see what's behind you. You don't get to see how that wall maybe interacts with the floor, interacts with the ceiling or something, you know, if it's outside of your 4x8 window that you told the software to render. And so there's sort of all these accidental shots that you run into and you start looking at and you start thinking, do I like how this corner interacts with this corner? Do I like how these two walls are aligning?
So if I'm hearing you right, it's that digital walkthrough versus actually physically walking through it at the end. And then you're like a punt situation. And that's where when I'm hearing about this, it's just mind blowing for me as owning a window and door company. We deal with very high end window packages. And when it's there and done in the field and they don't like it, that's a pretty scary situation. And that doesn't make anybody feel good. So you can catch a lot of those things digitally versus real walkthroughs. Matt, can you circle us back on that?
You know, when Justin was talking, I was thinking about a couple things. One was, a lot of architecture and a lot of design happens through what I call kind of cone of vision. And cone of vision is kind of what's right in front of you and what you see. And I think the stronger architecture that I have experienced would be what I would call like peripheral architecture, which would be 360 or 720. And Justin started to talk about it a little bit, is that if you're truly doing great design, it has to be fully integrated. So the stuff that's happening in front of you or wherever your vision is or your perspective is looking at, there's stuff that's happening above you, below you, and behind you. And architectural photographers have always had a really tough time capturing that. But I think Inkscape has sort of closed that gap, is that you can swing around in real time and see if there is a window behind you, say, that's above, that's allowing light to come in and wash some floor surface to create some dramatic effect or something. And so Inkscape has really allowed that to happen and communicate that to your client.
Yeah, that's powerful stuff. I'm seeing that visual in my head when you're talking about it, Matt. When you're seeing the photography, you just, it's just the shadow there. But with Enscape, you're literally, you can turn around and understand where those shadows and where those elements are coming or how sight lines and everything works together. That's pretty powerful stuff. What we're asking everybody on these deep dive series is that I really want to be educated, as I'm not using Enscape. And I liked how Mallory talked about how she was using Enscape more before she used Revit, but the tools have to be able to work together. So Mallory, can you educate me on how Enscape works? Because I've never used it myself. Just hearing about these rave reviews with power users like yourself.
What we do generally is put in a design for a test fit in Revit, and then we plug in Enscape. And what that does is showcase the 3D element of our design immediately. It shows spatial relationships right away. And another thing I really think that Enscape helps us do for interior design is use finishes and look at different design options. You're able to adjust the finish palette all the way from reflectivity to different textures and different mapping, which really helps you build your presentation board for your design development phase. And then we can also send out different BIM models to other consultants with the finishes, as well as add furniture models into your program.
You know, to build off what Mallory said about furniture, I just want to kind of direct people back to BIMsmith and Ben Glunz. And, you know, Devin, you can probably, call out what show number that was. But it is very important. I know when we originally looked at BIMsmith, Hayworth has their entire inventory for furniture on BIMsmith, where you can go in, drop it in, then take it into Enscape, and all of a sudden you've got some very realistic looking furniture. And it's so new that when the Hayworth rep came into our office here, I was telling her about it, and she was like, "Wait, what? We actually have that?" So I would just encourage people to go back, listen to Ben Glunz, BIMsmith, and to run in and check out his free software.
Yeah, I totally agree. He's part of an awesome series through Digital Built Week that Matt also sat on co-host with me on that. And that was show 155, The Digital Revolution of Building Informational Modeling. And that's what I love when we're talking about these different, connecting these technology to handshakes, when Mallory is talking about how powerful Enscape is, but BIM, building informational modeling, is a key component of all these tools of how they all come together. And BIMsmith is a great tool for helping do that portion of the future of digital architecture. Justin, what would you add back to how to utilize the Enscape tool?
Yeah, I think for listeners that are maybe new to rendering, it's important to understand that rendering software wasn't always designed specifically for architects and engineers and contractors. It wasn't always designed to work at the scale of a building. What we like about Enscape is that it does a good job of kind of meeting you where you are. It runs within Revit. It runs within ArchiCAD, SketchUp, Rhino, you name it. It is running within it, and it likes to use the lingo and the ribbons and tools of the software that you're running. So it doesn't demand that you export your file from whatever 3D software you're using and import it into a kind of standalone piece of software, and that you study animation and sort of know all of the animation lingo. It does a good job of breaking that down to realistic learning curve that architects and designers can jump into with relative ease.
Matt, anything you'd circle back there?
Justin is exactly correct. The bar to entry is incredibly low. Anytime that you could have a person like myself who would probably be on the scale of 1 to 10, I would be a 1 in terms of gaming skills. And I'm able to go in and navigate my way through the Enscape model on a keyboard without a joystick or a mouse. It's pretty easy. And we've sent links to clients as well, too, where they're able to walk through. And I guess that brings up like an important point that I want to make is when we were all in architecture and interior school, the presentation and juries were a very one-sided process. Basically, you were presenting your project and then you had critics from the jury and then they were criticizing it or giving you feedback or whatever. Where with Enscape, really when you're sitting with your client, it's a partnership. And so either we're doing presentations on GoToMeeting or Zoom calls, or we're sitting actually in the conference room with them, but they're sitting right next to us. And as everybody knows, you know, all great ideas are not just limited to the designers in the room. They're going to come from multiple users. And so if somebody throws out an idea of, hey, you know what, if we did this, we can actually in real time go in, change the model quickly, and it immediately comes up in Enscape, and we can sort of test the validity of that idea. And I think that's incredibly powerful. And I know that's something that Moritz talked about, Devin, when we were chatting with him on show 157, is that he wanted the bar to be incredibly low in terms of people coming together and interacting with this tool. All right. So, hey, let's jump into a little bit deeper discussion of Enscape. And what I'd like both of you guys to respond to, Mallory first, is what's sort of one surprise that you've had as you were working in Enscape? And then, you know, maybe, you know, one sort of tool or enhancement that you might see as being valuable. And I know they have a new version of Enscape coming out, so we might be bringing stuff up that they're already incorporated. But Mallory, why don't you chat about that a little bit, about maybe one surprise as you've been working with Enscape?
I think the biggest surprise has been the quality of the videos and the walking through the space. Like you said, it's almost a gaming platform, so it allows us designers to be the guide for our clients, almost like we're leaving breadcrumbs for them to walk through the space and experience what we've designed for them. I think that's the best surprise, is the ability to communicate with our clients and how well it works. A tool I wish that they had, I think we kind of hit on the non-photorealistic phases we like to use in terms of scale figures. I think instead of having 3D white box scale figures, it might be nice to have some architectural ones that we're used to drawing from school to give a little bit less photorealism, but we can also Photoshop that in. My biggest pet peeve is manufacturers, we want to use your products. The best thing you can do to help us designers is build models that we can import into our Revit files and Enscape to be able to sell your product and help our clients see a bigger scheme.
You know, one thing we talked about, Mallory, in the pre-interview was you know, kind of that dance between more sort of architectural representation and photorealism. And I thought you brought up a really interesting story about Entourage. And, you know, Entourage is, you know, the outside, the surroundings, buildings, landscape, trees, stuff like that. And you had an interesting story about that.
Yeah, so I had a client where we made some pretty photorealistic renderings, not in Enscape, with an outsourced person overseas. And what happened is that they got so caught up on what the outside looked like around the office building that they couldn't even see the great design we had on the interiors. So it was so distracting for our client to say, that's not really what it looks like outside in that suite, that we weren't able to get past that. And it kind of impeded the meeting. So I think that goes back to our thing of what do we present, when, and the representation of how photorealistic it is to not.
So Justin, let me jump over to you. What's kind of one surprise? And, you know, you already shared with the audience that we work together, so, you know, don't have it be anything personal about our design process. But outside of that,
come on, go for it. Knock your boss down.
But what surprise have you had working on some of the projects that we popped into InScape?
Yeah, we're talking about Entourage here. I've used other pieces of rendering software that are specifically for architects and designed to work at the scale of buildings that had built-in Entourage. Excuse me. And the dream of our renderings is typically to get as close to photorealism as possible. One of the dead giveaways right off the bat is if you have Entourage in your rendering that doesn't look realistic. It's difficult to duplicate a tree over and over and over again and make it look realistic because that's just not what we see outside, right? So one thing that surprised me about InScape right off the bat was how good the people and the trees looked. It's no longer something I felt like I had to take into Photoshop and find little cutouts to place in the image. I could do all that within InScape and save myself a lot of time there.
You know, and that's an important point that you make, Justin. It's, I guess it was about 2 weeks ago, Phil Reed with Reed Thomas, who we've interviewed and discussed was one of our introductions to Digital Built Week. Phil was in town and at the Autodesk location in Denver. And Phil was doing, he's doing like a national tour. I mean, the man is all over the place, but he's been rolling into different cities, meeting with Revit and InScape user groups to show them enhanced capabilities of InScape. And I know when Devin and I were there, we were sitting there and, you know, at Able Design Group with us just having it on board for 2-3 months, we use probably, 10% of what the capability of it is. But Phil even talked about this, just the human eye is so sophisticated and is able to detect photorealism versus realism. And I think InScape in this latest version is making some really powerful changes and enhancements. Like one of the things that he showed was how to make a sort of a light glow. And so, like a reading light, neon signs, those kind of things where you started to look at these interior spaces and you're like, man, that looks like the real deal. You couldn't tell that it wasn't actually the real space.
Yeah, definitely give credit where credit's due. Phil Reed is an integral person of a lot of these connections where he's very involved in InScape. And his podcast, go back to show 137 titled Don't Go to College to Become an Architect, is one of our top podcasts of all time with a very edgy title to all you architects, right? So time will tell on how all this stuff comes together of Moritz, who's a video gamer, to actual the principles of design, Matt.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wish I had heard that thing from Phil before I went to school. I could have saved myself a lot of money.
Hence, it's a title, right? So there's a time and a place for all these different lessons learned, right?
Yeah.
Art construction is one great touch point for sure. Yeah. Well, in closing, this has been a great conversation and great intriguing conversation about if you're not checking out real-time rendering with InScape, boy, I don't know what planet you're on if you're in these silos we're trying to break down. So I'm a big fan. But in closing, Justin, what is that one thing for contractors and affiliates to grow their business and connect technology to Handshake that you want to leave them with?
Yeah, Mallory and I are fortunate in that we've got Matt here and Jeffrey Abel, our principals who are, out attending those conferences and just getting to know all the software that's out there so that that's not just resting on the shoulders of, the technology team or whatever. So I say if you're in that administrative or management position, that you just, take the time to go to that conference that you wouldn't normally go to, or even just reach out to maybe the interns in your office, see what's on their radar, what trends they're seeing out there. You know, it doesn't mean you have to implement everything, but at least, you know, having that understanding of what's out there, I think can give you a great foot forward.
Great stuff, Justin. If you go back to a deep dive series we did with Builder Trend, I loved one of my biggest takeaways was we interviewed one of their contractors that used the tool, and he said, the key to when Builder Trend took off for my construction firm is when I designate a champion other than myself and really listened bottom up versus just top down. So I commend Jeffrey and Able Design Group with Matt and Jeffrey. And when I asked that question, what a cool story. Mallory, bring us home on Able Design Group. And what's that one thing you would leave contractors and affiliates thinking about to grow their business?
I think I'll also say something similar to Justin, is that I think communication is key. And in the day of information, where there are so many options out there to communicate with your designers and clients without having to have an on-site meeting or an ability to share photos of what's going on site with subcontractors or to draft questions from your laptop to us and get us information as quick as possible so we can turn around to get you an answer as quick as possible. I think what Enscape does nicely for us designers is we can be able to share these renderings with the GC and superintendent and even subcontractors for maybe more accurate pricing and better overall end product to show them, hey, this is what the end result needs to look like. This is what we're going for. And that allows them to respond back to us if they see an issue and how we can better achieve the same goal.
Awesome stuff. Kudos to Able Design Group for coming on Art of Construction and integrating these tools. Jeffrey, you got an awesome team. And Justin and Mallory, great job. Thanks so much for coming in and telling us your story.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Matt, that was just so fun for me. And I know this is audio only, but there was times when I sat back and looking at you on the video screen and you're in the trenches and you're using new tools and you're going out to these conferences. And then there's times where you just bring it all together and it clicks and you authentically hear there's the leaders of the tribe and then there's the doers that actually make it all work. And it's just so fun for me to hear these stories all coming together. And we're really solving a problem of let's look at it right on the computer screen and manage those two things, time and money we don't have enough of, and have more fun and get back to the art of architecture. What's your take with that conversation, Matt?
You know, the one thing that struck me was the advice that both Justin and Mallory gave is, and it really, I think, comes back to, your contractors and affiliates who are listening, is you got to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. What I mean by that is you got to reach outside what you know. You got to go places that you don't feel comfortable being in, because that's what's going to really help you stretch and grow as a person and also grow your business and therefore grow your profitability. And then, the second thing really is if you think of the model of going to buy a car, like if someone was telling you, you got to go drive this car, it's unbelievable, this is what it looks like, but it's all sort of a narrative discussion. It's not nearly as powerful as either going and touching the car, getting in the car, or watching a video as if you're driving the car. And so that's what we're really talking about here, is to be able to show that construction space that the contractor and affiliate is going to build, showing it in a meaningful way to the client that totally gets them engaged, hooked, and hungry and passionate to give you their business and build it.
I couldn't agree more. And we're just getting started on this thing with the Art of Construction when it comes to these deep dive series and how we're blending this all together for the tribe. The part that really resonated to me when Justin says, before the tool of Enscape, rendering was I'd hit a button and I'd wait 10 minutes and hope it worked. I'd hit a button and wait 10 minutes and hope it worked. And that was state-of-the-art stuff when you go back and listen to Matt talk about when he had his own firm about, well, he had to fly with a VCR tape to show somebody that. And it goes to the evolution of design. And the evolution of design is just getting started. If you're not paying attention to BIM modeling, and if you're part of a manufacturer that has no clue what BIM modeling is, you look at what Mallory talked about, give me the tool of your model so that I can put it in the design, and that's what we're going to sell. Don't go back to the path of least resistance or the easy way out, is say you do all these amazing design and tools, and then you just throw that away and go back to what you're always done. That's when I say the disruption we're creating and blending this stuff together for the art of construction. What's your take on that, Matt?
Yeah, I'd say just to amplify what you just said, we no longer live in a delayed gratification society. And so that, you know, 10 minutes or, hey, we'll get those drawings to you next week, or we'll show you something here in a couple days. It is an instant gratification culture. And people want it when they want it, which is like right now. And most of the times your contractors and affiliate knows, will know, is they want it yesterday. So that's what this tool is about. Instant gratification, visual gratification.
So as you said it best, Matt, and I'm going to steal your thunder, is that at the end of the day, I want my Enscape TV, but the Enscape TV that I'm seeing right now, I actually want that built right now, that I click a button on Amazon and it just comes to me tomorrow, right?
I'm wondering if Scotty can like cut some sting in there singing that, you know, I want my Enscape TV.
Well, I definitely want some Enscape TV here, and it's been so fun listening to the people that are actually using this stuff and running the microphone to really dig deep of, say, what truly is real-time rendering? Because it sounds so simple. But if you really think about it, it's changing how the art of construction is done. Hopefully this is another great story. Go back and listen to the other ones. And we're going to bring this home with Turner Fleischer coming from a fireside chat. What an amazing firm, right, Matt? Tee this up from, you were a guest co-host on the Fireside Chat podcast with Turner Fleischer.
Yeah, this company has a digital team of, I believe, nine folks, which is unheard of in the industry. So very excited to learn lessons as an associate principal at Able Design Group to understand how they use Enscape and what lessons I can bring back from that podcast to our firm.
Awesome. So this is all linked together. Each show is global and timeless, and you can listen to them when you can. But we're connecting all the dots, truly, literally, and figuratively. So go back before you listen to their coming back to Studio AOC, go listen to show 159 titled A Dedicated Approach to R&D and Office Management. And we're going to deep dive with them about real-time rendering. Awesome. Thanks for coming in, Matt, and being part of this. What another great conversation as we tie all this stuff together. And go check out Enscape. All the stuff will be in the show notes about how to solve your design using real-time rendering. Crush it out there, tribe.